The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello, you're very welcome along to the latest episode in the Home Show podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, it's almost June, that means bloom. We'll be chatting to the very popular event's organiser and also get some tasty treats from one of the chefs exhibiting this year. A very unusual festival is taking place next week, bringing together social housing experts from across the globe. We'll find out more about that. And Waterford, well, it's already a timeless city, but did you know it's about to feature thousands of clocks? We'll find out why. And Natasha Rocketvine on Alfresco design for all of those summer parties. If you'd like to get involved in our podcast, you can get in touch with us by email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on social channels as SineadRyan100. And of course, you can listen back to you've missed on the podcast, also called The Home Show. Now, bloom always has a special place in the June calendar and in the hearts of The Home Show. So we are delighted to welcome to studio to find out what it's all about this year, what's taking place, who's on, what's happening to studio chef Shane Smith, who's with me now. And Shane, you're already in favour because you've brought in something delicious to look at. And one of the bloom organisers, Kerry Gardner, to tell us what's on. You're both very welcome to the studio. We do love bloom. Before we get started, Kerry, great name by the way.
Yeah, I get that a good
bit. You've heard that. You are in charge of the horticulture and the events and all of that. Tell me what is new about this year's bloom.
Yeah, I guess we all start with our show gardens. So we have 21 new show gardens again this year. So that's, you know, the designers have been working hard creating 21 new gardens basically from scratch. And then we have our wonderful postcard gardens. There's going to be 11 of them again, and all new different community groups from around the country working on them. And then we have some lovely kind of touch points across the site, kind of things being refreshed, our talks. You know, there'll be new topics, new speakers on our garden stage. For example, we have new to bloom is Dermot Gavin. We have Adam Frost from BBC Gardeners World. And we have lots of our own homegrown talent as well on there. And then in the food side, we have a new experience, which is a Taste of Bloom curated by Nevin Maguire. So that's the kind of catering offering changed up as well this year.
Right. OK. So, I mean, over the years, it has kind of morphed into far more than just something for the green fingered to kind of wander around and check out the plants and all that. It has become a whole festival really in itself, hasn't it?
Completely, yeah. Like, I guess its origins had started off, as you said rightly, with kind of more kind of gardening and more niche, but as it expanded, and I guess that's Borbia's remit, it's food, drink and horticulture. So you see a lot more of kind of the food offering at Bloom, whether that's through the catering or through the wonderful producers that are showcased in our food village, to our Dunstores kitchen demonstration stage as well, which is lots of talks and demonstrations on over the weekend. It's a hive of activity, and we have our sustainable living stage. So there's lots of great talks on it there as well from NGOs, we'll say seed savers, invasive plants, rainwater harvesting, fast fashion. It's very broad in terms of the topics that we cover across all our
stages.
Okay,
so something, even if you're accompanying somebody who's green fingered, there'll be enough for you to entertain you for the day. And the gardens are very Instagrammable and people love them and they take away loads and loads of ideas. Now, there's always a piece around bloom regarding how to get there, where to park, how to plan it. Because in the Phoenix Park, it's not welcome really to drive and park. So there's always a bit of a hike wherever you're coming from. So what would you recommend people do?
If you can get public transport, we highly encourage that. You know, it is well connected with public transport. So if you are coming from across the country, and I live in Galway, so, you know, you can get the train or the bus up. But from the train, for example, you come into Euston Station, you walk across the bridge, Euston Bridge, and there is an ongoing shuttle bus, free shuttle bus service provided by us that takes you up into the park. And whether you're coming across on the bus, again, across the city on the Lewis, again, same, get off at Park Gate Street and then you can pop on one of the free shuttle buses, and that's on a continual loop. There was lots of them servicing from 7 in the morning to 7 in the evening, and we will see everybody off site safely.
Good, good, good. So shuttle buses are very, very important now just to get people up and down. That's brilliant. Okay, now, so aside from all the gardens and the blooms and all that, we, of course, the food has become really, really important part of that. And Shane Smith, you are one of the exhibiting chefs at Bloom this year. What's it like doing those demos? I mean, I think it's hard enough cooking without having to talk to people at the same time.
Multitasking at its best, I have to say. I think I have a little bit easier when you do pastry. You can have a little bit, here's one I've made earlier kind of thing.
Okay.
But I have to say that Bloom is probably the highlight of my calendar year. You know, it's a great way to get meeting up with producers in the food village with the fellow chefs that are doing demonstrations as well. It's just a hive activity. It's really fun. I always walk away beaming every day after doing a demo at it. So it's really fantastic. And yeah, counting the days at this stage.
And a bit of fun. And when it comes to cooking, like, I'd be a decent enough cook, but I'm a terrible baker. And I think it's just, I don't have the patience for measuring out things. And it's kind of like an exact science.
It is. And I think that's why I love baking, because if you follow the recipe every single time, it should work out every single time for you as well.
I say that. Right. Okay. Now, you're going to give us some ideas. It is, of course, if we're thinking of one food item that is looming large across June, it is the strawberry.
Yes.
The Wexford strawberry, but indeed wherever you get strawberries. Yeah. And it's such a fabulous ingredient. I love using fruit in salads.
Yeah.
Not fruit salads, but in proper salads.
Exactly. It adds and such a pop of flavour and colour as well.
It does. Yeah. It does. And strawberries are brilliant because they have that tartness. So they're not overly sweet, like putting in a banana. But you get that colour and they're so ripe at the moment.
We're just kicking off strawberry season at the moment. So it runs, the Irish strawberry season runs from May to October. So it's about picking up local strawberries now, and they're really at their best. The flavour is phenomenal, whether it's sweet or savoury, because we have two recipes to share today. One is sweet and one is savoury. So you can use them up in so many different ways. It's amazing.
Indeed. Now, before I'm going to get you to do the hard work and tell us all about those, what have you brought in? Because I'm looking here at a most beautiful, it looks like a cheesecake to me.
Well,
it's absolutely stunning.
Never to arrive with one arm longer than the other. So I said I'd bring a little bit of a cake with me here. I have a baked strawberry ripple cheesecake. So it's a strawberry puree that's kind of put through the cheesecake and then baked for about 50 minutes in the oven. But it has Irish cream cheese in there and some strawberry and a little bit of lemon, but very simple, but really tasty.
And your base is like, it's not collapsed. It's perfectly high.
I hit a roundabout on the way up. I was holding my breath coming off. It was in the back of the car, but it's in one piece.
Mine usually ends up as a cheesecake surprise.
An eaten mess.
Yeah. Deconstructed. And I notice there now you've gone full Meghan Markle there with the edible flowers, have you?
Never leave the house without edible flowers or edible glitter. That's just the rules when it comes to being a pastry chef. So edible flower season is well coming in here. So we have lovely violas, but you have calendulas, borage, so many lovely, beautiful flowers. And they're so easy to grow as well at home. So yeah, just a sprinkling on top of anything, it just finishes off a dessert.
Fantastic. All right. Well, while you cut that with the knife we've handily provided for you, and Kerry and I will enjoy it, you can talk to me about the first dish you're going to make. And this is a strawberry and feta cheese salad. This is a whacking salty flavour going with strawberries.
And again,
sweet,
just as you touched on, Shane, as well, it's just having that sweet and savoury aspect. So this salad here,
you weren't expecting that now, were you?
There
you
go. Treat. I feel like I'm at a wedding here now. Cutting up the cake.
Go with the flow.
Now, there we are. So yeah, basically Irish strawberries at the moment, some of them are super sweet, really I suppose beautiful in colour as well. It's not only to add visuals to your salad as well, but that lovely sweetness. And pairing that with whether it's salty feta cheese or whether it's lovely peppery rocket leaves, I love to add some nuts in there as well, just for a bit of texture, a bit of crunch. So even some toasted pecans, walnuts, anything in there for a salad. And what I'd say is this pairs lovely with a balsamic. I think anyone that kind of pairs strawberry and balsamic together.
It's a funny one, isn't it? And people hear that and they go, what?
Yeah.
Are you nuts? Or sometimes I put a little bit of sprinkle of black pepper across
a little hit.
You don't think it works.
Yeah.
It works.
And I think there's nothing, again, the sweetness of the strawberries that they're in season at the moment. You need to counterbalance that, whether it's with that little bit of balsamic or a little bit of pepper. It's a lovely, lovely hit. But again, not too much. And what I always do with the salads, you can kind of mix everything up together. And if you dress it too far in advance, it can kind of go a bit, it can wilt on you. So I would always have the dressing on the side, maybe let people drizzle their own dressing over the salad as well. But that lovely balsamic dressing with this salad is divine.
Okay, so strawberry and feta cheese salad. These recipes, folks, will be up on Shane's website, which is chefshanesmith.ie. So don't worry if you're trying to scribble it down.
And so that's a lovely one because that's one you can prepare in advance. You have it there and it looks beautiful on
the
table.
Don't turn the oven on. It's ready to rock. Mm. It's nice and easy. And just basically it's an assembly salad, which is great. Because again, when you're having people over, the whole point of that is to spend time with the people that's coming around, whether it's friends or family. So a salad like that looks the part, but it's easy to assemble as
well. Exactly. Now, when it comes to the using the strawberry for the purpose it was intended, as a dessert, as a sweet, you have chosen a strawberry shortbread stack.
Yes. So this dessert is basically lovely buttery shortbread biscuits. So if you want to elevate it up, what I do is take the shortbread biscuits and pipe some lovely cream and then put some fresh Irish strawberries in and put another biscuit on top.
Oh, like a little fry.
Exactly. But instead of doing the French way, we're taking a lovely Irish buttery biscuit style with it. But again, what I always say is if you don't have time to do the stack, if you make the recipe for the biscuits are lovely just even served on the side and you can people serve the bowl of cream and strawberries and let people kind of make their own dessert. You know, it's a really fun one to do. But visually for the stack, it's really lovely with the buttery shortbread and the strawberries. And they are the star of the show, so you don't need to be adding too much flavours into the biscuits or the cream. Leave everything quite plain. The strawberries really are the hero, so you're better off letting them shine, especially when they're in season.
Yeah, and like you don't have to do a lot with strawberries. No. Sure you don't. I mean, even if you just serve them cut, you know, sliced in half
and
some
Yeah, I find that as well. Just eating them out of the punnet just as they are is the best way. It's a guilt-free. But again, if you want to show off a little bit of whipped cream on the side or something is nice, just keep it simple. Yeah. That's how I say. Or if you want to have a little bit of crushed meringue, if you want to elevate it a little bit, a lovely kind of a strawberry trifle where you have fresh strawberries in there with a little bit of semi-whipped cream and a crushed meringue on top, and that's it, dessert done.
Where do you find that people go wrong, Shane, when it comes to baking? Is it that they're just terrified like me? I get like 20 grams out and the whole thing will collapse. or is it just that there's so many ingredients that, you know, you have to have them all laid out like on the telly?
I would find that I think there's a bombardment of recipes out there, and I think people sometimes can get a bit overwhelmed with the amount of recipes. And if you Google a lemon cake, you know, you've 200 of them at your fingertips straight away. So I find that if you know somebody or a chef that you like and you make their recipes, kind of go tried and tested recipes always work really well. But I'd say is don't go to the really complicated bake straight away. Start simple. So if you're going with bread, start off with a nice simple soda bread or brown bread or a brown treacle bread. But if you're going for desserts, don't go straight up to your profiterole tower. You know, there's steps to that as well. Just to add, I will be making a lovely meringue tower at Bloom coming up. So that could end in tears. So
I doubt it.
It'll be held together.
Gust of wind now is not what we want. Now, of course, we don't know, Kerry, what we're going to do next weekend. We've had such a lovely run of it. Fingers crossed. Yeah. You are catered either way. Is that right?
Yeah, we're ready. And we have a lot of marquee cover and there's lots of places to go on site. But we're still hoping and optimistic for good weather.
Now, is there a right way to go round like IKEA? Or can you be perverse and go in the wrong way and miss the crowds?
Yeah, I think people, depending on which kind of entrance, we have two entrances. We've kind of via the green car park or the red car park, or the red car park is also where you come if you're coming on public transport in the shuttle buses, and that's what we call entrance one. So if you're coming in there, you're straight away into the postcard gardens, nursery village, and kind of the community organisation garden stage is all there. And behind that then is the big indoor retail pavilion. But you can, and then cross over to the food village. So there is no right or wrong way, but certain people will have certain things they want to see first. Mm. So there's people that will just go gung-ho to see the show gardens first, or they might leave it to later on in their day, or be gung-ho for the food village and go straight for the talks, knowing who's going to be on the stage. So I'd say plan it in advance. If there's a speaker on a stage that you want to see at a certain time, weave that into your schedule for the day. But there's all the information is on Borbia Bloom website, borbiabloom.com, and you can see you want to, you know.
And that's a good idea, because if you absolutely want to see Shane Smith, and why would you not, then you know what times he's on, what
meringue
days
tower.
He's on, and make sure that the meringue tower is sold and now we are
there. Pressure
is on now.
My toe over myself. Make time
talk to me briefly. I'm being selfish here about accessibility issues. I am temporarily indisposed with a big boot and a crutch at the moment due to broken ankle. It can be difficult to navigate around the gardens and that, but how are you fixed that way?
Yeah, like there is steel trackway around the garden area, or there's existing footpaths in certain places. And if you go on our website as well, there's an accessible route that we have kind of tracked.
Oh, great.
That will help anybody who with maybe more mobility issues. So I would say do that and plan ahead. And again, allow yourself some time. I guess like any of these things, if we're not rushing, it kind of things become a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Maybe take a rest if you're going through the site and find yourself a little bit of seating. And again, plan that time in. But no, we are good underfoot and the weather's been very kind to us, so we're not anticipating.
Yeah, and of course that in itself is a problem because you've got these gardeners building these gardens and usually they get plenty of rain to make them look lush and beautiful. And now, like for the last couple of weeks, it's been the opposite. So there's a bit of work involved in making sure they don't dry out because these are all temporary gardens, aren't they?
Yeah, they're temporary and they'll go on to a kind of a permanent home after bloom. But I guess they have been literally doing the hard work, if you like, in terms of hard landscaping up to now. So luckily there hasn't been a huge amount of plants on site during the drier period. So they're coming in the last couple of days. There has been trees, of course, and they've been watered. But the rain in the evenings has helped a little bit and maybe taken the kind of a reprieve, even the last couple of days, with the fine weather. And again, even today, cooler in the morning, but again, it's sunning up again in the afternoon.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, lots for everybody there. And if you're going because of the gardens or you're going with somebody because of the gardens, there will be absolutely loads for you to do. So the website then is bordbeabloom.com. And you can find out all of that there and maps and who's on when and all of that. Shane Smith, chef, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
And especially thank you for bringing that. Kerry, you didn't bring in anything, but yourself isn't more than enough. And it was lovely to see you, Kerry Gardner. And the best of luck. I know it's going to be a busy week for both you now and there's a lot ahead. But we're delighted that you could tell us all about it on the Home Show.
Thank you very much.
Robin, hope to see you there.
Now, when you hear the word festival, you might think of music and dancing, but a very different kind of festival is making its way to Irish shores next weekend. Here to tell us about the International Social Housing Festival is Donal McManus from the Irish Council for Social Housing. You're very welcome to the News Talk studio, Donal. Will there be dancing? And will there be music?
There will. There'll be all that dancing, music, socialising, exchanges, all that good stuff. So it's, and you're correct, it's not just a conference, it's a festival encompassing tenants, communities, activists, political people and so forth. So it's much wider than just an odd black suit conference. So
good. And I'd say that will probably appeal to a lot of the delegates coming. And of course, it's not just Irish. This is a pan-European, a global event.
Yeah, it's a real global event, Sinead. This is, we have six continents, people attending from Australia to Latin America. So it's really like the World Expo of social housing is coming to Dublin. We've been conferred the right to do that, which has been great. It's the fifth time it's been conferred on a country, on a city, Amsterdam, Lyon, Helsinki, Barcelona and Ireland. So it is a big gig for that, but it's going to be on the 4th to 6th of June in the Convention Centre and multi-locations around Dublin as well. So thanks to all our key partners that helped to support that.
Yeah, now, and you've loads and loads of events on. So what can visitors expect to see and to hear?
Yeah, there'll be a multitude of different sessions, for instance. There'll be, obviously there's sessions, people are promoting various initiatives throughout the world, so they'll be very much inspiring people about what can be done throughout the world. There'll be workshops, there'll be promotion of videos, there'll be social events, and the whole theme of the festival is around storytelling. Ireland's very good at storytelling, so we framed the festival around that. So where there's tenants, policymakers, practitioners will all be discussing their ideas and views and their solutions, more importantly, around storytelling. So it's a very different event and we're glad to host it in Dublin, but it'll be there for 3 days. 2,000 delegates will attend from around the world, which is great. So we encourage any Irish people who are still left waiting and hanging on to register, please do so. This is a once-in-a-lifetime chance for it to come to Dublin, and we hope there'll be strong exchanges at the event.
Now, look, social housing is a topic everywhere. Every single country that provides any kind of social security net for its citizens, part of that package is housing and the provision of homes. But we seem to be an outlier in so many ways when it comes to social housing. I mean, it seems to me when we set up the state over 100 years ago, we embarked on a massive building plan where we had no money of loads of houses. In the middle of a recession in the 70s and 80s, massive building programme, no money. And now when we're awash with the stuff, we just can't seem to do it. What can we learn from countries that are doing it well? And what does that look like?
Okay, if you're looking at a sort of a utopia for a good housing system around the world, you're looking at a housing system that has good levels of social and affordable housing, Okay, that's the first thing. Our level of social housing is around 10%, which is a kind of less, nearly half the European average. So the first thing you would say, okay, what do you want to do? You want more levels of social housing. And we had loads of social housing built after the formation of the state, you're correct. And we went from a kind of feast to a famine. And we went from building large local authority, council housing, the Crumlins, Merinos, all really good estates at that time. And then it dropped off. We sold a lot of homes over many years. So the social housing stock diminished in large numbers. And then there was a huge demand when the economy picked up for social housing. So what we learned from on a basic level is you need more levels of homes for social and affordable housing in any state. So the countries that are more successful in their housing system, where they use social and affordable housing to support the housing system, not to replace other parts of the housing system. And that helps homelessness, reduce the level of homelessness. So that's one key thing we would say, having a more social and affordable housing, having it well-financed, that's a key thing as well, having land. So we'll see it at the festival. All these good solutions can be achieved over decades and centuries. Like Austria, for instance, would be the poster boy or poster girl for social housing. And it's no stigma. All people live in social housing from that perspective. So we will see good examples. We've used in Ireland some good examples to transfer from Vienna to Ireland for cost rental to house middle income groups. So we'd be able to learn from any new initiative, even for scaling up for modular housing. Other countries have done it much more larger scale than we have. So we can learn from that. How did it be achieved? Who was involved in it? And that's where you make connections. The festival is about exchanges. It's about connection. It's about solutions. And it's about promotion. And that's a key thing people will find out, the connections.
Yeah, in the countries, though, it seems to me that have done this well, like Austria, like Finland, parts of Norway and France, I believe, one of the key reasons is that a home is not considered an asset to be passed on to your next generation. It's considered a place to live for now, temporarily, and in the future. And social housing, where the political aspiration is to become a homeowner, which it seems to be in Ireland and has been for decades, the front and back garden, three bed semi, that's yours. How do you move that mindset? I mean, we're probably one of the very few major European cities that don't embrace apartment living as the norm, as the standard. Or rent as the norm and the standard. Everything about Ireland is, where do you have to own your own home?
Look, that's true. Social housing was seen as a third-class housing tenure for many years. That's reality. And some of the policies contributed to that. You know, selling off properties at a very cheap rate. So people are always incentivised plus to buy their own home and move out of areas. We are seeing some changes now. The quality of social housing is much higher now. When people look at social housing now, compared to maybe 30, 40 years ago, it's about much higher quality. So it's more desirable and people want to live there. And that's one big... And also recent studies have shown, even from the Centre Bank, that even young people are looking at the option to live in social housing. So it's a cultural thing as well. So young people now are probably would like to own their homes, but once they see the quality of social and affordable housing, like cost rental housing. Cost rental is another iteration of social housing as a rental housing. And it's good quality. It's lower than the market price. So people see that as an option for them. In the past, they wouldn't have seen that as an option.
But in other countries, cost rental, notably in Austria, what it means is they take your income and they use it as a multiplier, and that's what you pay for the home. In Ireland, we take the market price, which is hiked up, and drop it by 20% or thereabouts. It's not really cost rental housing.
Well, it's based on the overall cost of providing and managing the home. Okay, our issue at the moment is our entry point is quite high. So the rents are high at the moment. So when you build a home at the moment, to construct a home and to manage and maintain a home is more expensive now than it would have been a number of years ago. So our entry point for cost rental housing is higher. So the discounted market rent of 25% seems high. Whereas in other countries, they produced cost rental much earlier. So the rents were lower and will be low over the period of their lifetime. So that's one of the key difference. But we in Ireland, we've kind of used cost rental to target this middle income category in urban areas, especially those key workers. And I think we need more of that. And you're right, there's been this sort of resistance to building apartments. Even financially, there's been a difficulty with the private sector delivering apartments because a lot of the costs are front-loaded you know, building the underground car parks and so forth. So a lot of the costs are very much...
They can't build half of it and get and sell them and then build the other half like they can do in a housing estate.
Exactly, yeah. So. And
are we making them a bit too posh, Donald, do you think? Like this dual aspect and car spaces and lawns and all that. Like, is there an argument for saying, let's just get basic stuff built? People will live in it.
That is an argument. But also, you need good quality over the lifetime of the homes. These homes are going to have to be lived in for 40, 50 years. So you don't want to skimp now and regret it down the line where you say, well, we should have done a bit more high quality. Like, you think that the basic line of building standards and energy efficient standards are quite high now. So you have to build them anyway. So there's there is necessity to build a standard. And that's costly. Sinead, there's no way around that. It's more costly to build, you know, in urban areas.
Yeah.
Okay, we probably need more state sites. The LAA are probably one of the key actors in there to provide more state sites to lower the cost of...
Hundreds of hectares.
Yeah, of land costs.
Sitting around the place.
Well, that would help in terms of the cost rental, the rents themselves per se.
Okay, are you expecting politicians and in particular the Minister for Housing to attend this conference?
Yeah, there will be politicians there and obviously they can input. Obviously it wasn't focused primarily on politicians. It's a festival, it's a wider event than purely a political event.
All right, well look, I wish you luck with it. It's certainly a very, very interesting idea. I hadn't heard of it before. And I think it's great that it's here and it's coming to Ireland and everybody else can kind of scratch their heads and maybe try and get some solutions together, which would be great. Where can people find out a little bit more now if they want to attend? Because it's open to the public, some of the events, although there is a charge, isn't
there?
It's
a small charge. Obviously, thanks to all our partners, the Department of Housing Agency, Housing Finance Agency, local authorities, Fáilte Ireland, a small charge of €40. But if you want to Google www.eusocialhousingfestival.eu, You'll see all the information on that. So that's just Google onto that and you'll see the sessions. There's over 300 sessions over 3 days, which is massive. It's the biggest one ever in terms of the sessions.
Fantastic. So, and you managed to find hotel rooms for them all. It's an even better achievement.
Yeah, and in fairness, I think so far people have been accommodated. You know, so there isn't a housing crisis on that side quite yet.
Yeah. No. Isn't that... Well, we won't go down that avenue. Okay. That could be one of the reasons. We're building too many hotels, maybe. All right. Well, listen, Donal McManus of the Irish Council for Social Housing telling us there about the International Social Housing Festival, and that's on in the Convention Centre, but across Dublin from the 4th to the 6th of June. Donald, thanks a million.
Brilliant, thanks very much, Sinead. Thank you.
Now, it's time to turn to a very different festival, literally, one of Europe's unique cultural events. The 2025 International Festival of Time takes place in Waterford today, offering a celebration of innovation, reflection and the evolving nature of time. And joining me now is Coleman Curran, clock and watch collector and one of the co-founders of the Museum of Time and one of the organisers of the festival. You're very welcome.
Thank you very
studio.
Much, Sinead. Thank
so
you.
This is always a very... interesting event as far as I'm concerned, because I was saying at the top of the show, I'm a real stickler for time, very punctual, and it drives people nuts because not everybody is. I don't know why. It's not very hard to be. But people have a funny sense of time or funny notions about what constitutes time in Ireland. Because if you say to somebody, we're having dinner, comfort dinner, we're having dinner at 7, what time did they turn up? Quarter to 8.
Well, it's not. That's probably nothing to do with the watch they're wearing, to be honest.
I think you're right.
It's an Irish cultural thing. The beautiful thing about the watches that are on display at our Festival of Time in Waterford this weekend is that they're all individually handcrafted, handmade. They're wonderfully accurate. And they have lots of complications. So they're fashion statements. They're incredibly complex machines and they're made by very talented people. And we're lucky to have them.
Yeah. So like literally no excuses for being late this weekend. Talk to me about how your own passion started with horology.
Well, I practiced as a lawyer for about 30 years. And while I was practicing, my big hobby was collecting antique clocks and watches. And I retired early in order to set up the Irish Museum of Time in Waterford City. We opened in June 2021 and I'm delighted it's a wonderful success. And I'm still heavily involved. And the Festival of Time, featuring modern timepieces and modern watchmakers, independent watchmakers, I hasten to add, is very much complementary to the collection in the museums down there.
It's quite the left turn, legal to timekeeper.
Yes, I suppose so, but you have to do something as a hobby. You know, I don't play golf, so there you go.
This is it. All right. So the festival is spread across a range of venues. It's not just in one place.
Yes.
And some of them are, of course, very historical, given where it is. So what can people expect if they head down?
Well, the main feature is the exhibitors themselves, the independent watchmakers from all around Europe, and thankfully we have three or four from Ireland as well. So that's the main feature. But in addition to that, there'll be walking tours of Waterford City and the clocks, the public clocks and places in Waterford. There will be a keynote lecture by John McGonigal, who's a very well-known independent Irish watchmaker based in Athlone. And there'll be panel discussions and so on. So various events. And obviously, everybody should visit the Museum of Time while they're down there.
Of course, of course. And what do collectors look for in a watch? I mean, you're going to have people here who are collectors, who buy, who sell, who create.
Yes.
What are the key elements that make something a special piece?
Well, collectors, I always say, just to take the first part of your question, collectors, their lives are broken into three thirds, as far as I'm concerned. The first third, you're buying stuff and you're trying to educate yourself and learn about them, and you make mistakes. The second third, you're sort of fairly informed, but you're still making mistakes and you're trying to, you know, focus your collecting urge in a certain direction. And the third third of your collecting life, hopefully you know what you're looking at, you're not making as many mistakes, and you're fairly knowledgeable. You'll still say, why in God's name did I buy that? But you will also say, it's fantastic. When I bought that, I didn't realise how good it was. Now I know it's brilliant. It's a super thing. So that's the way collectors approach things. It's kind of, I suppose, you have to be a little bit odd to be so focused in collecting timepieces. But people do collect wristwatches. It's quite a popular hobby. People tend to start with the big brands and then gravitate towards the independents because they're looking for something different and something more unique.
And tell me now, how many wristwatches do you have yourself?
I would have 20 or 30 at least. They wouldn't be particularly special. But
you can't, like, you can only wear one at a time, I presume.
Yeah,
although I know some people wear one in each arm. But
it's nice to have different watches for different occasions.
Yeah.
Come on, that's a bit of fun.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And will you be trading at this now, or are you just going, or do you
no,
want to just look
I'm,
at everybody else?
I'm involved
else?
With the organisation, and we're facilitating this event at our museum and in the environs of
okay.
the museum. I won't be, but the watchmakers, the independent watchmakers who are there, certainly everything it will be for sale. If you want to buy a watch, some of them have waiting lists. You might have to wait for 6 months before
okay.
your watch is built or made.
Yeah.
They're all handmade. They're all beautiful.
Well, listen, that is the International Festival of Time in Waterford today. Lots and lots going on. If anybody is in the vicinity, wants to get themselves down there, and of course, to have a look in at the Irish Museum of Time. Coleman Kern, co-founder of that museum. Thank you for joining us on the Home Show. Now, whether we get the glorious sunshine back for the summer is unknown, but we Irish are a hardy bunch. We'll eat outdoors at the merest glimpse of a blue sky. And when you're having friends or family over to dine al fresco, well, the pressure's on to make it super stylish. So here to tell us all we need to know is the always sunshiny Natasha Rocker-Devine.
Thank you for
You're
having
very
me.
Very welcome back. You like me, you love that whole outdoorsy vibe, 100%. Don't you?
100%. I'm made for outdoor living, but obviously we're in Ireland, so it's just finding a way to design and style that works all year round as well. So, you know, the pieces that you buy or invest in, they can be brought indoors for the reality of our weather. But when it's here, let's embrace it. So
I think there's always something extra festive about eating outdoors, even if there's just family, even if it's just two of
100%.
You or 22 of you, because you can do styling things that you wouldn't do indoors.
100%. And also as well, I think everything seems stylish. You know, even if you get some plants from the garden and things like that, and you can just mix and match a bit more, there's less pressure on the exterior. And I think you're more relaxed. I think it's scientifically proven, you know, when you're around nature and a garden, whether it's a balcony or, you know, a large garden, whatever you have the access to, it's just, I just think you naturally wind down. You eat slower, you chill out slower.
Yeah, and anything goes, really. It doesn't matter if things are mismatched.
I actually,
you know,
better nearly in the garden if it's not so like everything.
It doesn't all have to be perfect, perfect.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go through some tablescapes then. Always beautiful pictures with you. Natasha, you're going to put them up on your website or on the Instagram so people can see it, Natasha Rocket Divine. Now, so the tablescaping, so your first... Your first kind of go-to is use what's around you.
It's 100%.
Keep it within nature.
And particularly if you, as you said, if you have 22, I actually had a party recently. It was a trial kind of a housewarming, but I was like, I'm definitely having more. And Sinead, you know,
trial
coming.
Housewarming.
Yeah, because I was like, I don't know if people are going to come and the pressure. So I had like basically I mixed family and, you know, friends and work friends. So, you know, you just don't know, but it worked out really well and we're getting our garden done. So I'd love to have kind of a summer party. So with that in mind, I invested in things for that from charity shops and from, you know, local shops, because I was like, I want to use it all year round, Sinead, but I didn't match everything. I was like, you know, it doesn't have to be matched, because that's the whole point of the garden. Like we said, you can get, like, if you have six plates that are kind of have pink in them and six that are black, actually, like, do them every second one, like, mix and match what you have. And then if you don't have, which I didn't have enough for everybody, I went to Vision Retail Ireland and got some beautiful, you know, things for wine and glasses, and mix and match what you have, especially for centerpieces or vases and things like that. And I think it's really fun, because you don't feel the pressure then if the guest list expands more and more.
Yeah, and also outdoors is where the chintzy kind of old-fashioned stuff works best.
Works really well, absolutely. And you can get a tablecloth then in a charity shop, or you can get it in, you know, wherever, HomeSense, IKEA, Jisc, wherever the list goes on. You can even make, you know, glitchy, get some cloth and like get it cut up yourself. So it's really fun. I think it's a very creative place to have fun with.
Because it doesn't really, like, it matters, but it really doesn't matter. Everything will look great out in the garden. Okay. Now, you're always very eco-sustainable. So some tips around that then?
Yeah, I think if you use, if particularly for plates, you can use biodegradable plates, because some people don't want to do the wash-up. They don't want to, you know, it's just fair enough, you know, and the next day when I'm doing my fourth load, you're thinking, okay, maybe you could do this. And especially if you've got kids, you know, they're going to break the plates and things like that. You just want to keep it simple. So if it's a really big party and you just can't do the maintenance after, you can get biodegradable things. And also, like I say, bring in kind of charity shops, things like that. And I think like that, old cloths, if you have throws, use a throw. Like, use things that you have. I think that's just really, instead of actually going out and always like buying new things, use what you have, or ask around, like ask friends and family.
And because you're in the garden, it's, you don't have to have, you know, beautiful crystal vases of fresh flowers. You can use the plants you already have in
100% in your garden. You can put all your plants and herbs and things like that into the vases. But also you can put them into jugs and things. I love when you see, you know, tablescaping outside and it's in a jug or a small little vase or something, you know, mixing and matching the scale of the place. I do think getting a little Pinterest board is fun, you know, to have a certain theme for it, just to make joy of it and to feel less pressure. But I think this is one place where you can really, you know, have a bit of fun with it.
Now, if you have, I have a very, very small garden, but if you want to have a bit of fun and create different zones in it, maybe one for the kiddies, maybe a drinks trolley. How would you do that?
So I think for me, you can make a drinks trolley out of, if you have an existing one. So say I love kind of the gold or the brass old vintage ones, but that might be a bit too out there. So you could put a tablecloth over it, or if you just had kind of, even like, if you wanted to do a DIY project, you could put together like builds of planks of wood and just spray paint them or paint them and put like signage on it. And then adding on those flowers and just adding in some glassware, some colourful glassware. It's just so much fun. And then things like, for a food station, if you do have a barbecue and you're set on eating outside to save kind of people coming in and out of the house, you can use like an old vanity unit in your house or something in your utility, or like a vintage chest, for example, in your bedroom. You can literally use it multi-purpose for the day and throw a tablecloth over it, and that can be the food station. So it's really about looking at what you have, because I think people get so pressured when the guest list goes up. It's really looking around and making it fun and getting like a pink tablecloth and a blue one, or like if it's all white, if you're like the more bohemian kind of neutral, and then pops of colour. But I definitely think a drink station, an area for the kids, and like maybe activities for the kids, like even things like easels or something they can paint with, or like if you have a swing, or, you know, things like that.
And kids love the idea of a picnic. So throwing down a blanket for them and not having to have mini chairs all over the place.
No, not at all. Absolutely. A picnic area for children, and then like activities for them, whether it's just something they like to make and do, I think. So whether it's like painting or just some kind of crafting for the kids to keep them entertained. And I do think different zones. So, you know, if someone's hanging out in the wine zone, they're out for a party. If someone's in the barbecue, they're more of a foodie. So, but it also makes it easier for the cleanup as well and for the hosting, you know, so you have it all set out instead of people running around the house.
Exactly.
Keep it outside.
Okay. Now, lighting is going to be important. Maybe not during the day in the height of the sunshine, but certainly as the sun goes down and you kind of create a different sense of space. Now, I'm a big fan of they don't always work, but those threaded lanterns which are solar powered.
They're really great, and they are solar panels and powered. I think they look fantastic, and fairy lights. And I think nowadays you can get literally everything that's solar powered, and then you can get the things that you stick in the grass, you know, if you have a beautiful
exactly
kind of walkway now for people parking in the back.
Top tip, folks, because I learned this the hard way, that just having the solar panel on top doesn't charge it. You actually have to, there's an on switch
to turn
on
it on.
Yeah. So, and then you can leave it there for a few hours and it'll build up the power, or if you can, a couple of days beforehand.
Ideally,
and it soaks in all the power. And then it'll just light up naturally for you.
It looks
it'll be
gorgeous
lovely.
If you have a walkway down, you know, people are parking, and I'm all about, like, this sounds terrible, I want people in my house, of course, but if you don't want to bring everyone through the house, particularly children who run around like my daughter and like raid
down
the rooms,
an alleyway,
if you do have parking at the back, it kind of brings people in, or it just creates, like you said, the zoning, it creates a walkway. And then I think it just, you can even use that to break up areas, like for food, if you could put them across the grass, and different lanterns. But I do think at night, and Irish people, let's be honest, they don't go home early. They won't go home early. So you have to prepare for the nighttime lighting. Let's be honest.
You can always dig out the Christmas lights.
100%. Yeah.
And just string them up across now verdant trees and fences.
Or even the table if you can. Obviously for safety with children and trip hazards. But yeah, there's so many creative ways. And that's why I love Pinterest board, because you could spend days looking at them. And also, I always think wedding inspiration, you know, they're very good for looking at outdoor styling. You know, because people who have weddings in Italy and, you know, things like that, I think it's really fantastic to look at that as kind of some, I mean, the chandeliers might be a bit much to put in for the summer barbecue, but, you know, some of them are fabulous online.
Brilliant. Now, it's lovely to use, you mentioned before, putting your little herbs and stuff that you have growing there in little pots. But actually, it's a lovely idea as well to use fruits as a decoration.
Yeah, actually, I love fruit. I'm such a fruit person. I eat fruit every day. So I think I want to grow my own, but we'll see how it goes. But I think for me as well, if you're making drinks, and even for children, I'm trying to teach my daughter, if you have mint in your garden or lavender or pansies or anything like that, you can put them into your, like, it's very trendy now to put on, like, you know, flowers and things into salads and, you know, things like that. But actually to have them on the salad, but actually make kind of, even in a drinks area or on the table, let your guests, like, interact and pick their own. I think it's so lovely to put it in a salad or to put the mint in their G&T or their wine. And I think it just makes it more interactive. And that's, for me, what a garden is, an active kind of fun space. And I think, you know, adding that into the cooking and the edibles and stuff like that is just really,
really and
fun.
They dry out very easily. So, I mean, to get lavender or lilac even, and dry it out in the oven, very, very, very low temperature, or the orange and lemon slices.
So lovely,
and dehydrate them effectively.
Yeah.
You're not cooking them.
You're just dehydrating
them, and it can take a very, very long time at a very low temperature. But what you get is just gorgeous.
And it could be lovely even in tablescaping, you know, to put it on top of the napkin or things like that. It can be really stylish, and also you can eat it, so it's fun.
exactly. Now, of course, you can also shop in your own house for furniture, because I think it can be a fun idea to take out a rug or a standard lamp, something that only lives in your living room, but actually just for today.
Bring it outside.
I
love the outdoors, indoors, and indoors, outdoors, both of those styles. So depending on how much space you have outside, because not everyone has the luxury, say, to have everyone outside. So if you mix and match, I think bring the pots inside, bring the lamps outside, and mix and match the furniture. So create an outdoors indoor and an indoor outdoor. I think it's a really fun thing, and just as you said, look, it's just planning. It's really very much just looking at what you have and seeing what you need, and then if you do want to go buy new things, buy things that are going to last all year.
All right, Natasha, thank you so much for coming in. You'll pop that up on your Instagram.
Yes, some great ideas.
Yeah. It's it's very Instagrammy, and it might give you some ideas then for something that you can do yourself, which is very straightforward, and no expensive ideas there, and lots to be getting on with. So, Natasha, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
The Home Show
and
again.
You'll come to the next party, you and Aoife, so we can put it on Instagram. I'm going ahead for my next one. Sinead, you're going to be doing all the flower arrangements and everything. You're a pro, so
going
out by the oranges and stuff like that.
Okay, well, I hope then that you're not relying on that, but
thank
anyway,
you so much.
It's always a bit of fun. And that's all we have time for on the latest episode of the Home Show Pod. I hope you've enjoyed it, the mix of guests and topics we've done. But if there's any you'd like to suggest, we're all ears. Do get in touch with us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, or you can find me on X and on Instagram at SineadRyan100, and I'd love to hear from you there. And thank you to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McLoone was on sound. And stay tuned next week. We're going to do it all again. Special bank holiday. Great guests lined up. And we look forward to your company then.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.